Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. What will the elite do, stuck on Earth, when those terrible weeks preceding the pole shift are upon us? What will they do? Where will they go? We have a preview, as going into the famous Zeta Talk warning for the passage, being shortly after May 15, 2003, there was some remarkable activity among those connected to wealth and power. They began heading for the hills. At this time, Planet X was visibly zooming into the solar system, seen as a second sun, as Earth was on the opposite side of the solar system. And as Planet X approached, sunlight bounced off its immense dust cloud and back toward Earth, confusing those who saw this second sun rising or setting along with the real sun. They thought they were seeing two suns. Since the Zetas had predicted the arrival of Planet X so precisely, could they be wrong about the passage? The elite took this seriously, and word spread among friends. This exodus of the elite was never in the news, as was rushing into Iraq to be sitting on the oil fields when the shift occurred, the rush into Iraq in March and April of 2003, just ahead of May 15th, or the top-off exercises running on May 15th, 2003, which involved 100 different U.S. and Canadian agencies on both coasts from Seattle to Washington, D.C., or raising the threat level to orange, as was done on May 16, 2003, for, it was claimed, some chatter on the Internet. This exodus was silent, except to those noting unusual activity in their vicinity and reporting on it on the Internet. Airport activity, specifically, at small airports, on private planes, Learjets, those planes used by the wealthy. The pattern for these elite flights in June 2003 were flights in the wee hours in the morning, flying low, under the radar, exiting St. Pete and Tampa in Florida, going north, exiting Palo Verdes in California to Elmont, New York, arriving in Greenbrier, West Virginia, and Wayne National Forest, arriving in British Columbia and heading into the mountains of Alberta, exiting Houston in droves, exiting New York City in choppers, arriving in Alaska, exiting the Philly area, heading south. The following comments were recorded between June 7th and 14th, 2003, on an Internet message board, and I quote, "Just wondering if anyone lives by a small airport has noticed any strange flights coming and going. The reason for this is I live by a small airport close to Palos Verdes in Southern California, Torrance Airport. It can handle some large aircraft, but I've never seen this much Learjet activity, and I've been here for 18 years now. I live in an apartment with a direct view of the flight path, so I can see them clearly. The airport is mostly for private propeller planes that people just fly around. These last few days, however, I've seen lots of Learjets flying in. Now, this may not seem strange, but when you consider we only see about two of these a month flying in, it starts to strike me as a bit odd. Now, Palos Verdes and the surrounding immediate area of Rolling Hills is a very rich area. Everyone there is loaded. The houses are all mansions overlooking the Pacific Ocean. I'm just wondering, are these rich folks being carted out of town at the rate of 3-4 Learjets an hour these days? It's just making me feel weird. I'm wondering if they're being carted out to safe and secure locations with the arrival of that anomaly by the sun, or for some staged terror strike. And from another, I live just about 2 miles from the main airport here on the west coast of Florida. In the last several weeks, I've noticed a number of Learjets flying in and out of the area. And from another, you're right, something big is about to go down or come down. Elite Learjets have been flying over my house for the last 4 days, which is not normal. Also, black helicopters, and by the way, I live near the infamous Greenbrier Resort. Catastrophic bunker relief for the global elite. The last 2 days, these jets have been flying in at the tune of 8 or 9 an hour. And from another. I live in New Jersey near a small airport. I have definitely noticed a large increase in small private Learjet activity. Though it's not an international airport, the occasional large jet would land and take off, but you'd rarely see a Learjet. Now it's constant activity. And from another. 6 to 7 Learjets per hour here in remote West Virginia. Usual air traffic is 3 to 5 private Cessnas a day. We got the bad feeling about this one. And from another. I live near an airport, Dane County Regional in Madison, Wisconsin, although it's not exactly small. Yes, there has been an increase in Learjet traffic recently. And from another. I live in San Diego, and the small airport by my house called Gillespie Field has been real busy the past week. I've noticed quite a bit of Learjets taking off lately. And from another. I've experienced something similar. I live in Michigan between Ann Arbor and Detroit. There's a small airport about 15 miles north of me. I've seen low-flying Learjets the past few weeks, not something I'm used to. I'm not outside all day, so I don't know how frequent they are. They get my attention because they fly much lower than I'm used to seeing. I'd hate to have to estimate how low, guessing 500 to 1,000 feet. Certainly low enough for me to look up and mumble in obscenity. They're coming from an odd direction, too. Now, I suppose it's possible that they have simply changed the pattern for incoming planes. Also, twice now in the last couple of weeks, I've been wakened from deep sleep by very low-flying jets. This happened between 4 and 5 a.m. both times. This seems a little early to me. Maybe not for the big airport, but the airport north of me is far from big. A Learjet's probably the biggest plane it could handle. And from another. My town's airport, which has 2 terminals, is one of the longest airstrips north of 49th and west of the Rockies in British Columbia. I've noticed jets flying in and out over the last week. The commercial flight to the city is a 40-seater Thunder Chicken, we call it. These are jets, 5 or 6 a day, where before they only left trails on their way over. They fly in from the south and head northwest. And from another. I live in rural southeastern Ohio near Wheeling, West Virginia. This is hillbilly country, the second world. I also have noticed a large amount of small jets. So being the nib that I am, I drove to a spot overlooking the landing strip. Jet landed and took off, loaded a couple of passengers, maybe 6. 2 SUVs pulled up and left. Jet then left. This is strange as we have only 1 motel in town. The SUVs drove into Wayne National Forest. There is nothing there. I could not follow them. This airport has no jet fuel. And why come here at 2 o'clock in the morning, 2 a.m.? Strange. And from another. We are in line with a major road going to the only airport in the country. Many planes follow it for guidance by eye. Traffic is way up in the late 2 to 5 a.m. flights mostly. And from another. I fish for the summer in Alaska, and when I was going to the airport in a very small town which tourists love to populate, I saw a very fancy jet plane, or whatever type of aircraft it was. It was rather fancy for a small, run-down fishing town like ours. I say we all stock up in supplies and start digging into the mountains. And from another, an unusual amount of aircraft is flying over today, one plane after another. Most of the time it was too cloudy to see them. I did see what looked like a Learjet heading south. This from southeast Pennsylvania. And from another. I live near the Sugar Land Municipal Airport, some 30 minutes outside of Houston. Well, it's small, private airport, but now since I'm always outside in my pool, I started noticing a weird trend a couple weeks ago. This airport usually serves Cessnas and other small aircraft, but lately I keep seeing jets arriving here and taking off all day, every day. Sugar Land is a very rich city, where most of the Rockets, Astros, and Texans make their residence, as well as other loaded people. But this traffic is definitely rare. And from another, no need to go to the States. Above Belize, there is an increase in small jets and helicopter flights for about 1 month. Belize is a suburb of Paris near the Orly International Airport. And from another, my cousin's hubby is high up in the Indiana State Police and spokesperson for Indiana State Police. We were talking the other night when he surprised me with the news that for the past several days, the ISP officers have been put on special escort duty, shuffling VIPs and their families to and fro from the local private airports. He himself had to escort one Mrs. Luger, wife of Senator Richard Luger, to and fro several times from their home here in Indiana. Mrs. Luger had some extensive packing already prepared. My source is pretty high up in the Indiana State Police. He was complaining that higher-ups are being put on escort duty instead of the usual grunt troopers and speculated that they wanted to keep this hushed up and out of the press. And from another, I live in the Sandia Mountains, east of Albuquerque, New Mexico, at 7,000 feet, and you can hear a pin drop. But starting around 3 in the morning, you can hear small planes or Learjets going north. It started about a month ago. In the news last night, they announced that Farmington, New Mexico, was becoming a busy airport. Farmington is in the northwest corner of New Mexico. Not much in Farmington, but it's one of the airports close to Colorado. And from another, important people bailing out in droves today. This happening in L.A. Anyone who is in law enforcement and emergency response are making tracks elsewhere as of June 14th. That's the word on the street, all leaving in droves the past 2 to 3 days. And from another, the 45th Paris Air Show kicked off on Saturday, June 14th, without the presence of a single top executive from a leading U.S. defense contractor. Lockheed Martin, the world's top arms maker, confirmed last week that its chairman and chief executive, Vance Kaufman, had pulled out of the show, citing scheduling conflicts. This from Reuters on the Paris Air Show. And from another. Here in Ohio, no airports close by with heavy traffic. No Learjets or helicopters flying overhead, although they do seem to have all the major exit routes blocked, or at least very restricted. End of the quote. Preview of what the public can expect when it appears the time of the pole shift is right around the corner. Unlike in 2003, when the Zetas had only issued a warning that rotation slowing to a stop would precede the pole shift, we now know that a lean to the left, 3 days of darkness and 6 days of sunrise west, will precede slowing rotation. But in 2003, red dust had also been a warning sign. And when Planet X put on the brakes as it approached the sun, its tail wafted past the sun toward Earth, depositing red dust on patio furniture and cars. So we had lots of red dust signs that spring. Thus the elite were taking the date of shortly after May 15, 2003, very seriously. Where were they dashing off to? We can see they were leaving Florida, leaving New York City, leaving the coastline of Houston, and leaving the coastline of California. But where were they going? Into the hills of Alberta or the Ozarks, for one thing. Into rock cavities, especially built for them, stocked with supplies and hydroponic equipment. Some more quotes from the Internet. These posted during the same time frame, June 2003. And I quote, This is very interesting. A friend of mine runs a small moving business in Vancouver. He recently got offered a big job to move some stuff from the airport to a couple hours into the coast mountains. Nothing too odd. This kind of stuff happens quite a lot, he says, rich people moving stuff to and fro from their ski cabins. He takes the job, and when he gets to the airport, it turns out that the stuff he's moving up there is very odd, not the usual kind of cabin stuff at all. Rather, canned goods, batteries, boxes upon boxes of bottled water, and this is odd since the destination is right next to a glacier. That sort of stuff, and lots of it. When it gets to the drop-off, it gets even weirder. These places are literally drilled into the side of the mountain. The woman who hired him pays him quite well and tells him if he doesn't spread word around, they have more work for him, seeing as how all their friends are coming up, too. It looks like people with the means to do so are holing up deep and for the long haul. Maybe this is where all those Learjets are going. This isn't Whistler, a ski resort mountain in Garibaldi Provincial Park. That was the one thing he was clear about. Beyond it not being Whistler, I really don't know. And from another, my husband is in construction and for the past 2 years has been off on long jobs, but the pay is good. Well, he finally told me what he was doing. He and his crew have been sent to Tennessee, for the latest one anyway, and drilling and constructing some sort of bunker-type places. He really didn't think anything of it. What he told me in the beginning was that it was for the very wealthy, who do extreme homes like you see on TV. Well, he isn't sure now, since this is the sixth one he's done. He does the prep and drill, and that's it. Areas are remote, but then people like to live away from towns. No neighbors, they're getaway homes, I suppose. I've watched TV's Extreme Homes and thought, well, okay, it's probably what it is. But this is his sixth one, and the same type. That's got me thinking. I don't know if there's some kind of bomb shelter or what that's bothering me. Mostly low mountain areas, yeah, and all are in the central U.S. or thereabouts. And from another, up here in northern Alberta, a few folks have been stashing huge quantities of meat and soft drinks. Not a restaurant or large family, either. Pallets at a time. A Russian emigre with wife, here less than 2 years. He's ex-intel. Lots of foodstuffs last week and this week. We know because we've got a lot of rice and beans in case and heard about these other big orders. Steak order was right before the mad cow thing started. Same time frame with the soda. And lately, 2-3 other big orders were for a wide variety of foodstuffs. Unusual habits for these parts in the summer. End of the quote. So evidently, word got out among the wealthy that they should prepare for the pole shift. And if it looks like the date is close, quietly leave on their Learjet. Meanwhile, the general public is left dumb, sitting on the coastlines at their jobs to drown or die when city skyscrapers crash down on them. Such is the nature of the cover-up. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Shared Secrets, written June 2005. We explained during the elite exodus that occurred in May-June of 2003 that the grapevine of information about Planet X and the impact of its passage is shared between the very wealthy that essentially own and control the world and the corporate and political puppets they control. When the pole shift did not happen shortly after May 15, 2003, in accordance with our white lie, there was a collective and audible sigh, not the tense silence that was present leading into this date. As the Earth's changes have steadily increased and challenged the cover-up, the cover-up became more ridiculous to the point of openly being discussed, even by those not in the know. But beyond this sharing causing increased awareness that Planet X is the culprit causing these Earth changes, and that Zeta Talk and Zeta Talk alone has both a comprehensive explanation and an astonishing track record on predicting the stages the Earth will go through as the passage approaches, the sharing opens avenues for future bunker mates to meet one another. They discuss what to do, where to go, and whom to include. The wealthy think of nest eggs, stocking supplies to get them through years of enclave living, and bristling with guns on the periphery. What they fail to compute is the psychological games that will go on when their militia realizes their masters have no power to punish them, and the current king of the hill can be toppled. Those wanting to loot will not head for the shanties of the poor. They will head for the wealthy enclaves and plan, like cockroaches and mice, to work their way in to topple the defenses. Enclaves will not find themselves self-sufficient, despite the best of plans. There will be items forgotten, items desired, a desire to import servants, or the desire to travel when contact by phone or radio prove useless. All this provides a breach in the walls of those who would be king. End of the quote from Theta Tau. There was palpable evidence that this sharing of information, this mention of the track record of Theta Tau, was ongoing in 2005. For example, this email, and I quote, "A high-level manager I know has been invited to join a firm-sponsored building project somewhere in the U.S. He didn't tell me where. That would get him a bunker of sorts in their survival project, which is said to be quite luxurious. Seems all my top managers were invited until the last 6 months. Suddenly, they've become much more inclusive. Apparently, they've revealed to him that they have had inside info on Planet X for several years and have been planning to survive for a year or two now. Poured lots of money into land acquisition and construction. The senior guys have flatly told him he won't have much more time. The end, as they call it, is that near, in their opinion. Their inside info source is reputed to be the federal government at some very highly placed person. This info has been disseminated to selected parties for several years. It's nothing new to them. They're telling my friend that they believe they're all going to be starting over, and beyond food and shelter, their material possessions won't be worth a damn. No need for Bentleys or Jaguars. No need for much of anything but a way to seal oneself off from the world for a while and make sure they can eat while sealed off." End of email quote. And from another email, also in 2005, on June 2nd, 2005, and I quote, "Your public profile is increasing lately. More radio, more comments, quoted, etc. While of course you're aware of the increased interview schedule, are you also aware that Theta Talk and you are being quoted in water cooler conversations at some large Century City, $500 an hour plus kind of law firms in L.A.? I've some minor connections to a huge law firm that represents presidents and former kings, dictators, entertainment industry players, major celebs, etc. Even those in rather lofty circles, they do seem to have some passing familiarity with Theta Talk and you. Thought you'd be interested, if not exactly flattered, to know that fact." End of the quote. And an odd admission by a fund manager on May 30th, 2005, a slip. And I quote from the Conspiracy Planet website, dated May 30th, 2005. "Renowned fund manager predicts global economic collapse." There was an interview on CNBC of the renowned fund manager, Julian Robertson. They used to call him, still do call him, "Never Been Wrong Robertson." He's predicted every economic cycle, every debacle, every bull market, and every bear market. Where does it end? And he said, utter global collapse. Not simply economic collapse. Complete disintegration of all infrastructure and all public structures of government. Utter, utter collapse. That the end is collapse of simply epic proportions. In 10 years' time, he said, whoever is still alive on the planet will be effectively starting over, and the comments were so negative. That the planet is simply not sinking into a sea of red ink, it's already sunk. He said that it will be necessary to control, in 5 years' time, food and water riots, huge detention compounds on federal lands, probably in the west where the land is available, to potentially house 50 million or more citizens that will be in financial ruin. Food production will fall. Total collapse of public infrastructure. Total collapse of medical care systems. All public pension systems. Social Security will collapse. All corporate pension plans will collapse. He was moving into one of the new super secure compounds for wealthy Republicans for when the barbarians will be at the gate. End of the quote. Does this sound like he's predicting a pole shift? What else would cause this degree of ruin? Crop shortages? Whoever is left living on the planet? And note, as a member of the wealthy elite, he's moving into a compound for when the barbarians will be at the gate. Those in NASA and in high places in government in the U.S. and Russia and Britain now know they cannot escape the Earth. How are they reacting, knowing they are trapped? An alternative to escaping the Earth to Mars or the Moon were the plans to go underground, to burrow into rock in places like Mount Weather. These plans are still active. For instance, for Mount Weather. And I quote from the Periscope website. It's hardened to withstand a direct nuclear strike on the mountain. You won't be finding any floor plans for Mount Weather on the Internet. Few Americans, indeed few congressional representatives, are aware of the existence of Mount Weather, a mysterious underground military base carved deep inside a mountain near the sleepy rural town of Bluemont, Virginia, near the border with West Virginia, just 46 miles from Washington, D.C. Mount Weather is buried not just in hard granite, but in secrecy as well. Mount Weather contains a working duplicate of the executive branch of the federal government, ready to swing into action at a moment's notice. Mount Weather personnel also maintain a database of information on U.S. citizens. End of the quote. And Raven Rock in Pennsylvania, and I quote from the Global Security website, known as the Alternate Joint Communications Center, located in Raven Rock Mountain, just over the Pennsylvania state line in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania. The computer operations staff provides computer services to the NCA, the Joint Staff, the OSD, and other DOD agencies through memorandums of agreement. The facility functions as a disaster recovery site. The various services, the Army, the Navy, and Air Force, also have emergency operations centers located there. Support is provided 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The facility's operations center provides planning, installation, operation, and maintenance of over 38 communication systems. End of the quote. So they're ready to dash into the hills. Where Raven Rock is built as a Defense Department site, you can bet it will be used to house plenty of bigwigs when the time of the pole shift arrives. It's rumored that Cheney hides out there a lot. Then there's the rumors about facilities under Denver's airport. And I quote from the GeoCities website. There's a lot of secret society symbology at the airport, an awful lot, in fact. Specifically, those involved in some very unusual government projects in the past have remarked that the Denver area is where the establishment of the Western sector of the New World Order will be in the United States. Denver's at a very high altitude and ideal for safe underground building. The dedication or capstone of the new Denver International Airport is a Masonic symbol. If you visit the airport's southeastern side of the terminal, you'll find the Masonic capstone in granite. This part of the terminal is called the Great Hall, which is known in Masonic lingo as their meeting hall. On the Masonic capstone is inscribed New World Airport Commission. An eyewitness helped build the underground facilities and reportedly killed himself via a double-tie catheter behind his own neck, strangling himself. It goes without saying that it appears he was murdered. There are many murals at the airport of an extremely grotesque and apocalyptic nature. After looking at the murals, many come away saying that they may represent what the elite plan to do with us. One of the murals depicts three caskets containing dead people, each person representing people who the elites may want dead, a black woman, a Jewish woman, and an American Indian woman. The casket ritual is common in the Skull and Bones Club, whose members include George Bush. In the same mural is shown the destruction of city and forest, a little girl holding a Mayan tablet that predicts the end of civilization. Another mural predicts a green giant Darth Vader-like figure wearing a gas mask, destroying a city. In this mural, women can be seen carrying dead babies. During the last year of construction, the underground airport system was being connected to a deep underground base, at least 8 levels deep, a 4.5 square mile underground city, an 88.5 square mile base underneath the airport. End of the quote. This is known as bunker mentality, which won't work out as those planning on escape to the bunkers hope. And I quote from ZetaTalk, Bunker Government, written February 2002. Underground bunkers where the U.S. government expects to proceed as a carry-on government have long been in the news. Mount Weather was a shock and an expose when first discovered, as it was so well outfitted and financed that the issue was more how such a facility could escape notice, not only physically but financially within the budget, rather than any other implication. Since its discovery and exposure, Mount Weather has not been the location of choice. This is, obviously, because it's well known, and in times of trouble the public would crowd the entry and lay there, dying and stinking, complicating life at this facility. Instead, other facilities not exposed and supposedly secret have been promoted. As is well known by their neighbors, a spot in Indiana, the prime location now, near Kokomo, Indiana, in the hills surrounding this small town, burrowing goes on as the shift approaches. Other facilities are known in the mountains of New Mexico, adjoining to facilities above ground in Utah and Colorado. Facilities to house the elite are also well known in North Carolina and Wyoming, prized locations of the ultra-right. In the past, the elite in the U.S. planned to go underground in facilities such as Mount Weather. Mount Weather, like Greenbrier, got revealed, and of course this ruined their ability to house the elite out of the reach of the maddening mob. Many, many other facilities were constructed, as rumored. During the past few years, some hysteria has emerged among the elite. The original underground facilities, which were in areas subject to flooding or mountain building, were abandoned in the plans, and new facilities such as Kokomo begun. The problem with these new facilities is that the construction has revealed them, and thus they too are no longer suitable. Thus, at this time, all plans are up in the air, though any and all facilities may in fact be used by the desperate. They will be entombed, or drowned, or attacked by angry mobs gaining entry, and thus in the true light of karma get what they deserve. But given that military personnel are not known for their deep thinking, are brusque and bossy, they grab at the projections and plotted their course. Given the size of the quakes, Richter 9 force worldwide, with mountain building and renting of continent risks, these underground facilities will hardly be a safe place. It takes a little to trap an outlet, torque an elevator such that it cannot rise or fall, and create panic in the tomb. Air circulation will not work, slowly smothering those trapped inside. Water will find its way into underground pockets, grounding those trapped. Electrical equipment will falter, plunging those into darkness. End of the quote. The sites at Mount Weather and Raven's Rock and the Denver Airport and Colorado facilities for NORTHCOM are well known to the public. But where, beyond Kokomo, Indiana, are there alternate sites? Are there secret sites protected by the military? According to those who have bumbled upon them, yes. This from a message board on February 12, 2004, and I quote, I drove to our satellite campsite at Mount Princeton in Colorado to check on its condition and check the latrine. It's a closed trail, only accessible by 4x4 or on foot. I parked the pickup by the lake and unloaded the gator from the trailer and headed up the trail. When I got there, I noticed that the area had been visited. I turned down a new trail. Instead of heading down, the trail turned back up the mountain and ran a long ways. I ended up at a closed shaft of the old mine on the backside, about 2 to 3 miles from the old town and the main mine entrance. This was well off the beaten path. I immediately noticed that there was a new dirt road leading up to the abandoned shaft entrance. This is Bureau of Land Management land, so motor vehicles are prohibited. I figured it must be Bureau Land Management people or rangers checking on the shaft to make sure it's still properly shut. I ran smack into a Humvee and two guys with M16s. They made me get off the gator and shut it off and wanted to know why I was there. I said I was with the Rocky Mountain Council of the Boy Scouts of America and checking our remote campsites. They told me this was restricted Bureau of Land Management land and I should not be there. I told them that the Boy Scouts of America had a permit to use the Bureau of Land Management land and that I had permission to be there. One guy went back to the Humvees, I guess, to get on his radio. The other guy asked me what I'd seen, and I told him about checking the old mine shaft. He got really mad and told me the area wasn't safe and I should not have been there, and my gator was a violation of Bureau of Land Management land policies. I got back on the gator, turned around, and got the hell out of there, back the way I came. As I approached the mine shaft to pick up the trail again, there was another guy at the top of the road. He stopped me and asked me if I was the Boy Scout guy, and I said yes, and he said, okay, keep going. I noticed he had a sidearm holstered in a standard M12 military issue holster, but what caught my eye was a gust caught his lapel and lifted it just enough for me to see airman's chevrons pinned under the lapel. End of the quote. And from another, this one dated September 21st, 2004. I live 15 miles north of Prescott, so I'm familiar with that area. I was a police officer in the Los Angeles area for 29 years and currently work in law enforcement in Arizona. On moving here, I noticed a regular flight of military helicopters coming from the northwest that passed over the area and then turned east. I was not aware of any military bases in the area, either from the direction the choppers were flying from or the direction they were heading. One was a larger single rotorcraft similar to the old Huey, and the other looked like the Apache attack chopper. In October of 1999, I took a backcountry trip to an area 35 miles northwest of my home, where I observed approximately 8 military helicopters flying in an area that I now know of as the Louis Marcia Baca Float No. 5. The choppers disappeared into the hills. When I returned home, I contacted a colonel who was a personal acquaintance of mine. I explained what I saw and asked if he was aware of any military base in that area. He called back and asked how I found out about the location. He said all he could tell me was that it was supposed to be a SEAL and Delta training area. I began to investigate further. The property was bought by a wealthy and reclusive philanthropist, John N. Irwin III, from Arlington, Virginia. The entrance to the ranch is well marked with no trespassing signs. There are no other primary access points. I heard from people who saw unusual lights and activity in the area. When they investigated, they were stopped by men in uniforms carrying M16s and told to leave the area. Two of these incidents took place in the mid-1990s. The most recent occurred last year when one of them climbed the fence and camped about 200 yards inside. He awoke in the morning, surrounded by men on horseback, carrying guns, who told him to leave and never return. This area is an extremely rugged wilderness, so unless they had ground sensors, there's no way they could have known he was there. I've been working in this area for 5 years and have yet to meet anyone from the Oro Ranch. In fact, most people I meet have no knowledge of it. When anyone asks to come on the property, they are denied access. Even the forest rangers know very little about the area, except to say that the people there are very secretive. The air above the property has been declared a military airspace, so private planes are not allowed to fly over most of it. However, last year I flew over it with a friend in her small plane at low altitude. We passed over a hill that had what looked like a landing pad on top. As we flew closer, I was able to see that it wasn't a landing pad, but large doors, with a red beacon light next to them. There are no roads in the area. End of the quote. And this from the Ozark, and I quote, saw another military convoy in and around St. Louis around 9 p.m. June 17, 2004. A friend of mine and I decided to follow it. The convoy comprised about 20 trucks painted in camouflage green, and then met up with another larger group of trucks approximately 50 miles due south of St. Louis. They drove to a very remote area south and west of Fredericktown off Highway C. At approximately 11:30 p.m., the trucks all turned into a very crude highway on the backside of the Mark Twain Forest. The area was not marked with any type of military signs. My friend and I parked and walked into the drive on foot. For approximately 1,000 feet, there was a very crude growth over tractor paths. After that was a brand new blacktop road that appeared to go on for miles. Feeling a bit uneasy about this, we did not go any further. Approximately 75 military vehicles disappeared down this remote road in a very hilly, dense, forested area of Missouri at almost midnight. If we did not see where they had turned, we would never have known about this secret road. End of the quote. The U.S. is aware in making their plans, but what about those aware in making plans in other countries? Not all countries are safe, of course, so the exodus is often to other countries. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Elite Enclaves, written January 2004. The elite have belatedly come to realize that they have no place to run, having arrogantly assumed that bunkering in the mountainsides would be fail-safe, and that, in any case, all of these efforts would be guarded by the mighty U.S. military. Bunkering in the mountains has been a favorite theme since the days of Mount Weather. Only the barest revelation of a massive undertaking to go underground from Denver to Houston to Kokomo to Virginia, known to the public. As the earth changes have commenced, the lockdown of plates during the deep quakes that peaked in the 80s and early 90s, the move to domino quakes where the whole world felt the shudder of an adjustment anywhere on its surface, and the devastating effect of stretching, not even considered in prior calculations. The term rock solid takes on grim overtones when this is rock that drops into the tunnels during stretching, or shifts to skew a doorway such that it cannot be opened. It is known that when rock is compressed, radiostatic and compass interference occurs. But those in underground chambers die mysteriously during intense rock compression, a surprise to their human masters, who suddenly find themselves making other plans at this late hour. The U.S. military, as has been suspected since August 2003 vacation time of grim faces all around at the Crawford Ranch in Texas, has bolted and no longer takes orders from the White House, all appearances aside. Thus the elite, from arrogant politicians and corporate executives to the pampered wealthy, must make new plans. The result, not surprisingly, is to enclave in those countries or regions where the locals are either in sympathy with the elite or well suppressed and considered a slave class, to move their supplies and militia there under the guise of establishing vacation homes. These regions are, not surprisingly, in Central Africa, Argentina, Eastern Australia, Kazakhstan, and Wyoming. Norway was considered an option until very recently. It should be noted that these spots give access to oil reserves in the case of Nigeria and Kazakhstan, and it was hoped Norway with access to the known fields. Argentina and Australia are harshly ultra-right, as is the Wyoming enclave of Cheney. Each of these enclaves allows outreach to land masses in all directions, so are not expected to be isolated. Places avoided by the elite are areas expected to be crowded from overpopulated cities, such as the east coast of the U.S., Europe, and the Pacific Rim. Countries dominated by Islam are also to be avoided due to anticipated culture clash and the resulting hostility. Our advice to survivors, regardless of how friendly these new neighbors portray themselves, regardless of what gifts they come bearing or what offers of aid, avoid them like a plague. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And are we getting reports from these areas that the elite are moving there, setting up shop, and trying to take over? For instance, from Argentina? And I quote from some message board postings. April 16, 2004. What are two Israeli army reconnaissance teams doing in Patagonia? They always travel in groups of 5 to 7 persons, always one or two women among them. Every group has an officer, and they reduce contact with locals and others to the necessary minimum. A Chilean with some knowledge in these matters told us that they travel in configurations which would correspond to missions of reconnaissance and insertion in military terminology. This person confirmed to us that the exploration of the Patagonia under guise of tourism has been going on since 1976, intensifying after about 1982. And from another posting. After Iraq, Argentina, Brazil, and Colombia, marine illegal in Argentina. Bush's plans of getting Patagonia. Marines did an exercise with big boats, choppers, and planes over a small island in the Argentina Delta. They were asked to leave and told they were not welcome. And from another posting, February 16, 2004. International tourism here in Cordoba, Argentina is so obvious that even the news teams are fascinated, printing stories almost every day. People leaving big crowded cities like Amsterdam, Paris, Berlin, and New York City, selling everything they had back home and relocating here in Argentina. And from another posting, December 17, 2004. Many members of the Israeli establishment are making preparations to relocate to South America, most likely Patagonia, where huge tracts of land have already been purchased by the Israeli government with funds supplied by the United States. And from another posting, January 20th, 2004. I just came back from the Andes, and the villages are preparing for the return of what they call Herculebus. The skies are a brilliant red at sunrise and sunset. They are moving to higher elevations and stockpiling food and water. While I was there, a lot of foreigners in their private jets are landing and staying. They're planning on a long stay. End of the quote. The Russian government has been planning for years to go into bunkers in the Ural Mountains, and Jackson Hole in Wyoming, where Cheney is expected to hole up, is no surprise either. What are the other spots the Zetas mentioned as international getaways for the elite? In Africa, specifically Botswana and Zambia, the African spot of choice mentioned by the Zetas, and I quote from Zeta Talk from the Safe Locations documentation. The highlands of Botswana and Zambia will be considered ideal by those wanting the safety and climate of Africa during the aftertime, and with enough funds to do this in style. Close to the industrialization of South Africa, at a distance from the steaming equatorial humidity of the Congo, these lands seem dry, arable, defensible, and accessible from a country friendly to the colonial attitude, South Africa. Thus, these countries are likely to find well-stocked and serious visitors preceding the shift, intent on being the dominant force in the region after the shift. What will be unexpected is the disease that will invade the area despite any defenses. Africa, from Uganda to South Africa, is riddled with AIDS and under the continuous drizzle that will accompany the shift for years. Ebola-type viruses will emerge from the swamps and be everywhere. In the kitchens, in the rodents and lizards, infecting the water supply and the servants, and inevitably the masters. Those with natural immunity to these diseases, who are few, will be the survivors, and plans to be the kings in the aftertime only a whisper in the mist. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And for Kazakhstan, another spot mentioned by the Zetas, and I quote, Kazakhstan will be immensely important to the Russian people after the shift, as it is high country and well connected to parts both north and south by culture, commerce, and tradition. Grounding Russians from the north will arrive at what will be the new shorelines when the lowlands of Siberia go underwater. They will bring with them few possessions, but humility will not be among them. Kazakhstan is not considered the home of the elite in Russia. But any elite now scrambling to the Urals will try to set up shop in Kazakhstan. Where else would they go? To the Alps or to Sweden? Thus, in preparation for this arrival, either just before or some months after the shift, residents of Kazakhstan should mentally prepare their stance toward such a takeover attempt. Guests are welcome but are expected to work alongside their hosts, and no new leadership is desired. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. But the earth changes continue to assault all countries, creating droughts and deluge, intense storms, and the cover-up continues. Unable to dive into underground bunkers, stuck on the surface with the masses, Perhaps rioting masses that a deserting military will not control. What to do? An interesting twist that emerged in 2006 is sudden philanthropy, which, for the Zetas, is not unrelated to an elite exodus. Why would Bill Gates and Warren Buffett suddenly decide to give away billions? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Sudden Philanthropy, written September 2006. When the Earth changes begin in earnest, creating a steady uptick in quakes and volcanic activity, a discernible earth wobble and weather extremes with intractable drought and deluge and punishing storms, though smugly assuming they had an escape with the matter to attest, teams were sent to many of the bunkers and not allowed out for weeks at a time. They died in droves of emissions akin to radon at the rock under pressure during the daily torque the Earth is experiencing as Planet X tugs at its poles in the highly magnetized Atlantic Rift. The anticipation of using these enclaves, gone. Where does this leave the elite today? The U.S. military was to be used to guard the oil fields of the world, to enslave mankind, being in possession of the prime marketable commodity, black coal. Today, the anticipation that the oil fields can be held for the elite is fading, as Iraq is lost and the Middle East more resilient than ever in their resistance to the Bush-Israeli plan for occupation. Enclaves on the surface of the earth will likewise not be secure, a fact the elite are discomforted by, and they are casting about for a solution. Hired guards have questionable loyalty when there are no forces to keep them in line. The mindset of those hired to guard the elite will turn from a purchased loyalty to takeover plans. Why should the guards not be king? In that the elite are aware of Zeta Talk and stay abreast of new Zeta Talk regularly, they are aware of our advice to the common man that love will be the commodity of the future. Those in the service to other will receive technological assistance from benign aliens, will be offered the lift during the hour of the shift, will encounter and communicate with benign aliens, will meet their loved ones on spaceships when communications on Earth become impossible, and will live in communities where looting Mad Max gangs are non-existent. In all of our descriptions of these service to other communities, there is no requirement that one shed all their wealth. So a stratification of living circumstances seems possible to those in the wealthy elite wanting to be converts. The rule is to care for others, 50-50, as much as the self, to practice the golden rule. Thus handouts of excess wealth, paper money which will soon be worthless in any case, seems a good start. They're trying to buy in. End of the quote from Zeta Talk.
Hello, I'm Roger, President of Troubled Times Incorporated. We're a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping mankind survive during troubled times when self-sufficiency may be the only answer. Our organization offers a twin set CD of survival information at cost to the public. The CDs are in hypertext and PDF format, two popular browser formats, and contain all the information collected by the massive Troubled Times website. The CDs allow you to browse this information offline at your leisure. The cost of the twinned pair is $4.10, and this includes postage. You can also get the survival booklet, a hip-sized booklet of the gifts of the Troubled Times advice, for just $5, including postage. We offer a popular combo package for $7.50 that includes both the CDs and the booklet with the lower postage expense reflected in that price. Send for your copies today to start making practical plans for your and your family's survival. Just click on the $4.10 CD link at www.zetatalk.com, and your copy will be on its way.
That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought, those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.